Welcome to the Fat Emperor podcast. I'm your host, Ivor Cummins. Today we're going to talk about blood tests, and everyone seems fascinated with blood tests and what they mean and what the best ones are. Now, as I've always said, on behalf of IHDA.ie and myself, the coronary calcium scan and the CAC score is the test to find out if you're at risk. If you're middle-aged, middle risk, you're not really going to know from blood tests. The calcium scan blows them away. However, people still want to know about blood tests, how to track their health between calcium scans if they're spread out for a few years, and to keep their vector in the right direction. So they have use, for sure. And today I'm going to be talking to a great buddy of mine, Dr. Stephen Horvitz. Steve. And he's going to go through, he loves a whole range of different tests. So we're just going to go to talk through them, their relative value. And the last thing I say before we get to Steve is, extratimemovie.com, that's extratimemovie.com, all one word. That's where our new movie is out, a fascinating exploration of reversing heart disease. We'll be going through a lot of tests and a lot of other interventions. So great if you can support and share that and download it for $3.99. That'll really help us out. So hey, Steve, how are things?
Great, Ivor, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. We're kind of locked down a bit here, but I'm 7 days a week out in my back office, out in the back garden, where everything comes from. So doesn't bother me much.
Yeah, I've been in my home for the past about a month, just working out of my living room. Very interesting times we're in.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we might circle back to that towards the end, but I thought we'd start off with just this conversation on all these different blood tests, and everyone's got a favorite. But I think there's a few really core ones. And I remember many years ago, there's not many men I like giving my bodily fluids to for testing purposes. But you were one of them, and you did a huge suite of tests for me back in 15, I think, in New Jersey. So I really appreciate that. But yeah, you've got basically menus from different laboratories of all the blood tests, and you've been looking at what they mean and how predictive they are and how solid they are for many, many years now. So maybe just pick one after the other, some of your more valuable ones, you believe, and just we'll talk around them a little.
Okay. Well, interestingly, when I do the blood test and I interpret them, I like to think about what they mean in, I think you're familiar with this, an engineering systems approach. So I pretty much break down a lot of my blood tests into metabolic issues, immunoinflammatory issues, nutrition issues, hormonal issues, and then we'll go into some of the organ systems. But what has worked the best in helping to decide upon people's risk factors are the metabolic and the immune inflammatory issues. And the best tests that I found have been fasting blood glucose, fasting insulin levels, and then calculate the HOMA-IR, or insulin resistance numbers. That helps me to help the patients the most. I can explain that pretty well to them. They understand. And it's just go home and change your diet once we get those numbers down.
Yeah, and HOMA-IR, I mean, the fasting measurements, of course, are not as good as postprandial or CRAF tests or any of that stuff, but those are kind of less practical. So I love that because the HOMA puts together a fasting glucose, which has certain value, and a fasting insulin, which has certain value, and it puts them together and makes them more powerful together. And I don't know, my rule of thumb, I know the guidelines are be below 2 in your HOMA. And people, by the way, can Google HOMA calculator, those two words, and they'll quickly get to a calculator. They can enter in their own values. But I kind of go by below 1.2, or ideally below 1 would be nice. And above 1.8, you know, you're out into the insulin resistant territory. What do you reckon?
That's about where I am, and that's one of the things I follow as well. I tell people there's optimal health, and for optimal, I want that HOMA-IR below 1. For okay metabolic health, you can be below 2. Above 2 is definitely where you do not want to be. And then it's as simple as do things to lower your insulin levels throughout the day.
And those now are becoming kind of brutally apparent. I know if you switch from a standard American junk food diet to, say, a plant-based diet and eat lots of vegetables, you're going to get an improvement because you're cutting out the junk. But the real kind of nuclear weapon of rapidly dropping it for me is no sugar, refined carbs, seed oils, and start doing some fasting, but mostly eat healthy, wholesome, higher fat, real foods, lower carb, like meat, fish, eggs, avocado, all that stuff. It's not hard to dump your numbers within days. What do you think if you really go?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I have people come in and within 2 weeks, they can have lowered fasting blood sugars, lowered HOMA IR levels. Lowering the carbohydrates, lowering the excess plant food, the excess seed oils, it's just so simple. The problem is that at least the American public has been, told for many, many decades that fat is evil, protein should be limited, and you have to eat as much carbs as possible. So it takes a lot of convincing, and you know, just getting one test doesn't work. We have to follow it up. So usually what we do is we get my test done, and then about 4 weeks later or 3 months later, depending on the person, we'll repeat the test. And when they see the marked improvement from the change in their diet and lifestyle, they've bought in, they get it. And then they start telling all their friends, and their friends don't want to hear from them until they do it, which is the other issue.
Yeah, and that's when people lose weight as well. That can be the best advertisement of all. But certainly being able to tell stories about how real markers of health have gotten much better. And you know, with the calcium scan, sure, you got to wait a year or two anyway, even if you're a high score, really, to check back in. So these things give shorter term feedback. And there's nothing as powerful as measurements getting better to make people feel good about what they're doing. Without measuring, you know, people are doing stuff and just not really sure. And you, I just thought of this now. You actually were carrying a little weight. You were doing things mostly pretty good, but you decided to go much more hardcore. I think it was around a year and a half or 2 years ago. And even though you were doing very well physiologically and weight-wise, you got yourself an accelerated program for what, 7 or 8, 9 weeks? I remember you were tweeting about that. What did you do?
Yeah, well, I've been forever skinny fat, tofu, thin outside, fat inside. And there's a lot of obesity and heart disease complications in the men in my family. And of course, I don't want to follow in those footsteps. So I've been low carbohydrate for about 12 to 15 years at least, but I was following what you call the dirty low carb, where lots of cheats here and there. So I originally lost a little bit of weight, but then got stuck at a certain number. About 2 years ago, I decided, you know what? I'm going to give this keto carnivore thing a try. And over about 7 to 8 weeks, I was probably 95% carnivore. And my weight dropped by about 12 to 15 pounds in that time period, 6 to 7 weeks. Waist size went down 4 or 5 inches. Appetite went down. Energy level went up. Sleep improved dramatically. Stress level down. I felt like I was going after the world instead of the world going after me. So the keto carnivore, whichever way you want to think about it, for me, fixed my metabolism, fixed my immune system, fixed my gut, my nutritional parameters all improved. It just reinforced that not only low carb dieting is wonderful, but the keto carnivore for me and my risk factors worked wonders.
And of course, you got to, you can't really, whatever about telling people do low carb, that's mainstream now, really. And to be honest, even the American Diabetes Association, that was anti-low carb for decades, their new CEO has been low carb for 10 years to get herself off all her insulin. So low carb is almost mainstream now, especially for people with metabolic challenge. But like you say, doing something like keto carnivore, it's probably still more something for yourself and an experiment rather than kind of pushing it to patients, I'm guessing.
Well, it depends. When my patients come in and we do the full slew of testing, if their metabolic system is off, if their immune inflammatory system is off, if they're having some gut issues, some irritable bowel and other issues such as that, the keto carnivore diet tends to work best in my patient population for that. People come in, you know, a month later feeling good, their weight's down. Actually, they start getting a little dizzy and lightheaded. And usually that's because they're on blood pressure medicine that has to now be reduced because they don't need as much of it. Again, everything that happened to me, they're sleeping better. They have more energy. They're never hungry. I guess it depends on which population we're treating. And I tend to get a lot of people who have the combination metabolic, immune, inflammatory, and gut issues, which really the one particular item that fixes all those is just fix the diet. Fix the diet, fix the gut, and those three systems all improve.
And, you know, I like that because that's essentially the individualized medicine they've hyped about for a long, long time now, but it's always been around drugs for individualized. But that's perfect. Individualized and targeted on the people's specific problems of what works best for them. So what about, the home app? Absolutely. Great test. So simple. What would we move on to now for another valuable test that you find very informative when you're assessing people?
There's two of them, actually. I like the test for the fat cells, the adipocytes, so one called leptin and one called adiponectin. I've been doing those for probably 10, 12 years. And what I've seen is that people with the highest levels of adiponectin tend to have the least metabolic issues. And tend to, these people can have high adiponectin and be 30, 40 pounds overweight and not have any of the metabolic consequences of being overweight. Something about the adiponectin helps their insulin work wonders. Leptin, on the other hand, to me, when I see it, it tells me about the inflammatory fat storage in their body. And it can vary. I could have two men come in back to back. They're both 5'10", 200 pounds. One could have a leptin of 10, which is okay. One could have a leptin of 30, which is very high. They're both 5'10", 200 pounds, but the one person with the higher leptin has a much higher inflammatory state. And when I do further tests on them, or if I would happen to get a coronary artery calcium score, most likely theirs would be a lot higher. So the leptin and adiponectin are kind of like yin and yang for me for metabolic inflammation, and also goes towards vascular inflammation.
Well, you know what, Steve, I to say I resonate with that. I was early on in analyzing or researching adiponectin and leptin way back, but it was around 2015, was around that time. And I remember when you immediately put them forward on my list of tests, and I came out quite pleasantly with the leptin so low that it kind of flagged on the printout from the laboratory, and the adiponectin came out so high it had an asterisk on it. So for people listening, this pair of leptin and adiponectin, and we talked through leptin with Dr. Ron Rosedale the other day, they're huge. So I used to say in 2012, when I was lecturing groups in my corporation, I used to say if I could only measure one blood test and I was only allowed to look at one, it'd be insulin, whether postprandial or fasting, you know. But adiponectin and leptin, I think, I'm starting to put them in that category. If you had glucose, insulin for HOMA, and leptin, adiponectin, and some knowledge, wow. I agree with you. What do you reckon?
No, I love that. But I want to go one step further. A lot of people will come to my practice, will do the testing, will review the dietary changes we want them to do, and then they'll say, all right, I'll do it. I'll be back in a month. and they come back in a month and some have not had any success. And I ask them, have you done the diet? Have you done the changes? And they go, yes, we have. I have. I said, well, let me get a couple blood tests now just to follow up. And there's a few blood tests I use that I call my BS detector. It'll kind of tell me whether they've truly been following the diet. I want to let you know what those are. One of them is a uric acid level. And in most people, as long as you don't have gout, the uric acid will tell me how much sugar or high fructose corn syrup you've been having. So people started with a level of, say, 6. They come back a month later and it's still 6 or higher. They haven't cut their sugars down. That's one. Number two, I like to get a lot of thyroid tests. And one I like a whole lot is called the free T3. That's the active thyroid hormone. And what I found out from reading and research, and I'll give a shout out to Amber O'Hearn, the carnivore researcher, she did some research on free T3, and that shows less about thyroid function and more about the context of your diet and what your body seems to be burning for energy. And when I follow the free T3 hormone, if that hormone level drops while they're on the diet, I know they're compliant. If it doesn't or it goes up, I know they've been cheating with carbohydrates. And I've been following this for about the past 2 years. And I could look at people and just say, all right, stop the BS. What are you really doing? Then they laugh and smile and they can't figure out how I know, but then they actually try harder and usually are more successful the next time.
Excellent. And yeah, Amber has done some fantastic research and produced as well free, I think, books or at least chapters she was sending out with all the details of certain diets and what you supposedly might be low on in vitamins, minerals. But the reality is going to a special diet, it may reduce your need for certain vitamins and minerals. So really valuable work. But a free T3, I love that. I'll just mention Dr. David Unwin in the UK. He uses GGT, the liver enzyme, and he catches the cheaters pretty quick with that one. But free T3, excellent. And as well, lower is perceived as not really an ideal thing, but I think in the context of making it lower, because of your new healthier metabolism, lower can be seen as a good thing. Maybe just a few words on that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Everything is in context. If I have somebody with a actual hypothyroid or underactive thyroid condition, I can't use the free T3 necessarily in that context. But you talked about Dr. David Unwin in the liver. Yeah, that's the other areas I look at in what I call the immune or inflammatory cascade that I look at. And the things I look at there are your GGT, your ferritin, and your other liver tests, your ALT and AST. When I look at those, when they're elevated, I know we have a fatty liver going on or early fatty liver and metabolic dysfunction again, and that usually correlates with the uric acid from the too much fructose, too much sugar overloading the liver. And then when the liver gets overloaded, the fat cells get overloaded next, and then the whole process breaks down. So again, everything kind of goes together between the metabolics and the immune inflammatory system.
And you know, I suppose we'll have to cover the old cholesterol, so I think we can probably skip by the bit with the isolated high LDL value, because at this stage the dogs in the street know that that's almost worthless, and the high total cholesterol. The ratio of triglyceride to HDL, people generally know now, is much more important because it reflects metabolic health. But maybe the advanced lipoproteins you get, people often ask me about those. So maybe a little discussion of how valuable do you think they are and just some of the things you really watch for in those advanced lipoprotein tests.
Well, that's a good question. In the past, I did a lot of advanced lipoprotein testing. And actually, over the past 2-3 years, I've actually reverted back to a regular lipid panel, where I'm mainly looking at the triglycerides and HDL ratio. I found that that tells me as much or more than the other advanced panels where I used to get the small dense lipoprotein fractions and the LP little A and all those things. But when I'm looking at risk factors and what advice I can give to people, I just want to see their triglycerides lower than their HDL cholesterol. And if we get them there, they're doing well. I know for me, when we talked about it, a few years back, I had my cholesterol lipid panel done. And my triglycerides were a little bit over 100. And my HDL was about 50. I was about a 2-to-1 ratio of triglycerides to HDL. 7 weeks after doing the keto carnivore, my HDL shot up to 75 and my triglycerides dropped down to 53. So I was now below one in terms of the triglyceride to HDL ratio. And that's when I felt great. And I follow all my patients with this. And as they move towards that, they tell me the same exact thing. They feel phenomenal. They feel 10, 15 years younger, more energetic. So I think when I look now at the cholesterol and lipid panels, probably more along the Dave Feldman theory of the energy transport system as opposed to a heart disease issue.
Yeah, and I think the advanced lipoprotein, I mean, it may pick up specific risk individuals. I know from long conversations with Arthur Agatston and others that the small dense may appear with a genetic susceptibility where the other metrics might not show so well, or LP little A or some other genetic things. But that's probably into advanced cardiology stuff. And as a family practice doctor, you've got to kind of be practical and look at the key metabolic things. So I understand that. You know what occurs to me is omega index. I know, I think you like that one. I got it done back at 15 and I was pretty good, but not as good as I'd like to be. And I always got to remind myself I need to eat even more fatty fish and all that kind of stuff. I'm probably not great for that. But yeah, the omega index, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I love doing that one. It's just a great immune inflammatory marker for me. And absolutely, when the omega-3 index goes up, most of the other inflammatory markers on my panel go down, which is wonderful. And also, as the omega-3 index goes up, your triglycerides will come down. As your omega-3 index goes up, a lot of people, when they have gut issues or autoimmune issues, those improve. So the omega-3 index is just a wonderful little marker for overall inflammation in just about all the systems that I check.
Yeah, it seems to be one of those kind of master markers of a sort. So if you take, and I'm certainly going to, any more you want to add, but just occurs to me, if you got your HOMA from your fasting insulin and fasting glucose, and for the win, maybe do a 2-hour insulin after taking the 75 grams glucose, see, are you under 30 microunits, but that's for the win. And you add in then omega index, you add in leptin adiponectin pair, and you add in the classic panels, but mainly the ratios for cholesterol. And then you add in the liver panel with ALT, AST, particularly GGT, and the ferritin, of course, inflammatory marker. It can also show if you have hemochromatosis, very serious, pick you up easily. If you put that little lot together and you lived your life and changed your nutrition and lifestyle to get all of that little lot into good shape, you wouldn't have missed much, would you? You'd be a mile ahead of the average person, a country mile.
Yeah, I agree. Not much. Most of the patients in my practice have health insurance where I'm able to get this lab panel without an issue. But I will have some patients who cost is more of an issue. Their insurance will not cover something or they're paying for these on their own. And when that happens, I shrink down the panel I use to pretty much what you just mentioned. Less cost, and it gives me a lot of bang for the buck.
Excellent. Yeah, because we have to be practical. I mean, everything medicine and health, you know, it's Pareto principle yet again. You want to do the 80% of stuff that keeps the cost reasonable, or sorry, the 20% of stuff you could do that keeps it reasonable, but gives you 80% of the likely predictive or lifestyle feedback required information. So yeah, I'd agree. And you know, these tests, but just before I go ahead and talk about our current issue and how these tests will pertain to that, any others that would really jump out as really nice ones to do?
Yeah, probably the simple CBC with differential tells me a whole lot. When we're looking at inflammation, I want to know how the immune system is responding to what each person is doing, what they're eating, what's in their environment, and all things like that. So I like to see the white blood cell count. I like to see that number somewhere between 3 and 6. To me, that is very balanced immune inflammation. When it's above 6, to me, that tells me that they're having some excess immune issues and inflammatory issues, which, you know, at this time with the coronavirus going around, we want a balanced immune system. We don't want a hyperimmune system or a hypoimmune system. We want one that knows exactly what to do and how to keep itself balanced and safe. So the white blood cell is very important. And we look at the differential as well. There are a few of the differentials that I look at. They're called the monocytes, eosinophils, and basophils, or we call them MEBs, M-E-B. And a good marker of overall inflammation, immune inflammation, or even gut inflammation is if they take those three percentages and they add up to 10 or less. If they're 10 or less, their immune system is generally in pretty good shape. If they're above it, their immune system is being stimulated or irritated from something. And that's what we don't want right now.
Yeah, for sure. Cytokine storms type scenarios. Well, I talked in the last couple of days and released Dr. Ron Rosedale from coming out of India and Dr. Paul Mason from Australia. Now I've got East Coast America, Dr. Horvitz. But the other two guys heavily, heavily focused on insulin and leptin. And insulin and leptin resistance as kind of proxies for the whole excessive exposure to serious outcomes from corona. So I think we'd all agree on that. And then the other tests help as well, of course. This corona thing, it kind of stuns me that it is so biased towards hypertension, which is kind of a very linked to insulin resistance, really, most of the idiopathic hypertension. Diabetes, pre-diabetes, and pre-diabetes, and to heart-related issues, which to a large extent tell you that people had diabetic dysfunction for a long time. So if you add up the risk for serious outcomes, and we'll put aside age for the moment, it all dominated by insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome, hyperinsulinemia. I mean, the whole lot of them put together. And I suspect, like the other guys said, that an 80-year-old with excellent insulin sensitivity and low leptin and high adiponectin, let's say, probably has much less risk than a 55-year-old who's insulin resistant, you know, whose metrics are not good. So it's not really age. It seems that this risk of serious outcome or even tragic mortality is enormously related to metabolic health, more than any other acute crisis we've seen maybe in history almost.
Yeah, it's really the overlap of your metabolism and your immune system, and they're so intertwined. You know, I'm not a microbiologist or an immunologist, but, you know, I've had quite a few patients in my practice with COVID, and the ones I'm seeing that have it the longest, that are, you know, down for it for quite a while, are the people who are overweight or hypertensive. And what I'm hoping is when we get through this initial wave and things quiet down, that maybe we can, as a healthcare system, move to a wellcare system where we can keep trying to get people to reduce these risks. I truly believe that the coronavirus or COVID, whatever we want to call it, would not be as bad if people were just healthier and their metabolism was in good shape and their immune system was in good shape, their gut was in good shape. They got outside, they de-stressed, they slept well. So many things that make up lifestyle and wellness would prevent bad outcomes from COVID. And the number one thing that is actionable for everybody is control your diet. You can do it. No one, I believe, is shoving the wrong food down your throat. It is your choice what you eat and when you eat. So if we can work on this, maybe we can prove the experts wrong who believe there'll be a second and third wave of COVID over the next year or so. Maybe we can knock that down and get back to normal lives.
Yeah, that's a great sentiment, Steve. And you know, you mentioned there that metabolic and immune system are so connected. Well, just for people to dwell on this for a moment, the innate immune system is the one that's causing the problem here, really, and overreacting, not the adaptive long-term. And the innate immune system is sometimes called something else. It's called the metabolic health or the metabolic immune system. So yeah, they're just utterly intertwined, metabolic health and the capability of your immune system to respond appropriately, powerfully, and also the capability of your immune system to not overshoot and cause the cytokine storm. So not only is all the data I mentioned showing a massive metabolic link to poor outcomes, but all of the science says, yeah, that makes sense, you know. So that's a great way to think about it. And this current issue, for me, it's almost like it's a visitation. It's a virus. There will always be viruses. But the things that cause heart disease, cancers, and diabetes, amputations, you know, neuropathy, and all these modern chronic diseases and Alzheimer's, the same things that cause those to come on early, to be more severe, to cause more tragedy, well, they're long, slow diseases in a way. Whereas this COVID, I think, is giving us an acute, sudden, shocking, dramatic illustration of what poor metabolic health can lead to. So I hope, like you say, this will focus the world on the importance of metabolic health and make it much more upfront, personal, and close, and highlight this. Yeah.
Yes, COVID is definitely showing and hitting the weaknesses in metabolic and immune health. And while age is a risk factor, and I agree with you, the healthy metabolic aged people are doing okay. The wear and tear from when they weren't doing okay is still a risk factor for them.
Yeah, for sure. So any other thoughts, Steve? Or I know we wanted to keep it pretty tight today. Any other thoughts before I do a closing outro?
I'm just glad you finally had me on. I know we've been talking about this for about a year. So I'm happy to come on here. I'm always happy to chat with you. I know we go back a long way. I would just like everybody to figure out what they can do to get through this COVID pandemic as safely as possible. And I don't want people to be looking to government or schools or big pharma or anything like that to get through this. I want them to look at themselves at what they can do and what they themselves can control. And for everybody, you know, watching, if you've watched some of Ivor's previous podcasts on this, what can you control? Your diet, your nutrition, and your lifestyle. If you can do that, you can lower your risk dramatically, and we can get through this as safely and as quickly as possible.
Yeah, great words, Steve. And you know what? I resonate as well. I know you have a very strong self-sufficiency attitude about patients and people in general, and don't run around like sheep and expect the government to do stuff for you. And I certainly agree overwhelmingly. People need to take action and take the responsibility for their own destiny. And I don't know, this generation now currently compared to post-war people, I think we've lost a lot of independence and independent thought and critical thinking and taking action for ourselves. So that's a great sentiment. So, you know, oh, the other thing you mentioned, yeah, we meant to do this for ages. And the funny thing is all my buddies around the world are the very guys who have not been on the podcast, because people keep getting presented to me, suggested to me, and keep flowing in. And it's hard to keep up with all the editing and the video editing and work. So we'll circle back again for sure, Steve. And you've reminded me to get another couple of guys that are too close to me to think of, which is kind of a contradiction, but there you go. So yeah, we'll wrap it at that. We'll keep it tight. And again, I just ask everyone, free podcast 68, 69 now, many more to come. They've always been free and give a whole lot of value, I believe. But the ask is, if you go to extratime.com and download $3.99 or stream, download $9.99 and share the information, because we've made a movie, a lot of work. We've scanned 45 middle-aged men who are sporting heroes. We've followed some on their journey with massive scores on heart disease that was not identified before we scanned them. We've followed their journey to stop their score progressing, stop and even maybe reverse their heart disease. So it's a great story. Really enjoy it. And you can help us by help spreading the word. So thanks a lot, Steve, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Igor.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see my subscribe button in the middle of the screen, and go to extratimemovie.com to see our fascinating new documentary on stopping and reversing heart disease.